shell shock.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Joey Galvez, and here is the second episode of Shell Shock, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle podcast. And just like always, I've got your favorite co-host, Paul, and he is the Krang to my Shredder. How's it going, Paul?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, man. This is the second episode, man. Are you excited?
I am excited. Our first episode has now been released.
Yeah.
And I already feel like we're highly acclaimed. probably the best podcasts about mutants on the Nerdy Legion, that's for sure. I mean,
that it's, goes about it. Is it because we're the only one?
Yeah, you know, I mean, some other ones, it's a little bit in their wheelhouse, but I think we got it locked down.
I think we got the Ninja Turtles locked down at least.
if we lose this Ninja Turtle gig, we got nothing.
Right? And it's been pretty cool hearing some of the feedback that we've been getting. This sounds like this is going to be a pretty fun thing to do. I'm excited.
Me too. I think Ninja Turtles is one of those things that even if you're not a big fan, even if you just vaguely know what they are, they're fun.
Right. Yeah. It's one of those things that, man, you've liked them at least one time in your life. So that's what I think, at least.
Yeah. Unless you have no heart, Daryl.
This week, we've got some really fun stuff for you guys. The first book that we're going to be talking about is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends, and that one is going to be Paul's book. We're going to have a little bit of trivia, secret of the segment. We also have a mystery character spotlight that Paul has not talked to me about yet, so that one's even a mystery to me. So I'm excited to see what that's going to be. And then we've even got a second book here that I'm going to be talking about, the Macro Series number 2, which is Michelangelo. This week is going to be fun. Let's go ahead and jump right into the first book. Are you ready, Paul?
I am ready. It's almost like I've done this once before.
Right? let's jump into this first book.
We're proud to be a member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Cowabunga!
Pizza Dude's got 30 seconds.
Give me that.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
The comic I'm talking about is Ninja Turtles Urban Legends. I've talked about this a little bit on at least one, if not both, of our previous recordings. This book is just, it's real fun. It's a reprint of the 90s Image series. And the 90s Image series is not looked at as canon. Peter Laird flat out said it's not canon, so it's not considered to be part of the real story of the Turtles. And I think that's why they presented it as Urban Legends.
Yeah.
But this is really cool because it's reprints of the original stuff, but it's colorized. So let's go through the creators real quick here. Story is by Gary Carlson. Art is by Frank Fosco. So now they brought these guys back to do a few additional issues at the end of this run because the Image series from the 90s, it was canceled before it finished. So that's pretty cool. Inks by Eric Larson. People should know who he is. And Chance Wolf. Colors by Adam Guzowski. So obviously that's a new feature. Letters by Chris Eliopoulos. The original series editor was Eric Larson. The assistant editor was Chase Marotz. Then the current editor is Tom Waltz. Obviously, with IDW republishing this, he put his touch on it. Published by Greg Goldstein. So yeah, I love how it gives a little of the story so far. So this is the first issue, and it kind of tells you what's going on in the story. Not that there's been a lot going on yet, but it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles' birthday, and Master Splinter has a big surprise planned for his four beloved sons. But he's not the only one. .. And it starts off, the first page is just one big image of Donatello just being blasted by something. You see his bow is shattering and everything. His bandana is getting shredded. So right off the bat, it's just jumping you right into craziness. I mean, one of the Turtles getting seriously injured like this is not something you're used to seeing.
And I got to tell you, that page is awesome, man. I'm looking at it and the artwork is so awesome. And with it being colorized now, you see so much more. It's so cool. Like, if you're looking at this, dude, it looks like he's being blown to bits.
When you colorize something that was done in black and white, like, there's always something to be said for art that's just done in black and white. But colorizing it makes it so much easier to tell a lot of details about what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
You're just going through this series all together, I feel like that's the case. So right off the bat, you're getting craziness that you don't see. You turn to the second page and the third panel across the top is Donatello, like, reaching up his bloody hand. And this is, like, you don't see blood like this in the even in the original series where there was blood and mayhem, wasn't like this. So right off the bat, they're fighting these cyborgs. Donatello's been blasted to shreds. Fight goes on. Things get chopped off of people. Crazy ninja babes clad in a very 90s image attire. It's just crazy.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, parts of her covered.
So it's we're just not going to get into crazy this one.
They abduct Splinter. They abduct Donatello. Raphael gets his face, like, blasted off with acid. So, I mean, in this first issue, there's already crazy, crazy stuff.
Oh, man, it's so crazy.
I mean, you can see right off the bat why this isn't canon. Because it's just, it's wild stuff. I wonder how people reading this when it came out in the 90s that were Turtle fans. Like, I mean, my guess would be that a Turtle fan would be like, oh, man, it's so great to have Turtle book again. Then you get this. They were probably appalled by it.
Yeah,
but
I
looking
bet, man,
back on it.
You're like, what the heck is happening to my favorite turtles? One's getting blasted, yeah, and he's going to be turning into a cyborg. The other one, his face is getting melted off. And all this craziness is happening all in this first issue within the first 3 to 5 pages. And you're, yeah, man, I think that I would be completely appalled and wondering why is this better not be in canon, you know?
Yeah. So looking back on it, I think it makes it a little bit easier to enjoy from that perspective. I mean, I'm sure there are people who checked it out. I mean, there were probably people who checked this out that weren't Turtle fans, that were just Image fans.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously Image was a big deal in the 90s and they were making some waves. But, you know, looking at it from the perspective that we have now, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's really crazy. It's really wild. Every issue ends with a, like, really making you feel like it's a big cliffhanger.
Yeah, I definitely
this issue ends with Splinter, who's been drugged. He goes to the astral plane to contact Leonardo to tell him what's going on. There's a couple pages before the end, you have the close-up of Raph's face where he says, "It hurts, Leo. It hurts bad, and I can't see very well. How does it look?" And his face is, like, half-melted away. He's got, like, an eyeball popping out.
Oh, man. That page is crazy. The color, man, in that page just makes everything look so crazy. You know,
yeah, you can almost smell the burning turtle flesh.
You want to talk about turtle soup. You know, there is one page I kind of liked a whole lot there. It was that page where they're kind of, you see a little bit more of you know, the beginnings of their birthday, and they're all hanging out and they're talking about some stuff, and Master Splinter is telling them a story. You know, that's when Donatello goes off to go get the cake, or he goes and grabs something out of the kitchen or somewhere. And as, you know, Master Splinter's giving them the small turtles in that bowl, you know, and, you know, he's like, "Oh, are you guys part of the party? You know, you guys, you know," and he gets blasted off by himself. So I love that we kind of went back a little bit and they told us a little bit about that. So
those pages, I guess, like, it sets up the emotional bond between the group, the four turtles and Splinter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it gives some gravity to the situation where Donatello has been, you know, nearly killed and abducted. Splinter has been abducted.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, honestly, otherwise, if you didn't go into this knowing who these characters were, there's nothing else in this first issue that makes you go like, "Oh man, their dad, their brother was kidnapped." You know, it's,
right.
Yeah. They're just like, you know, let's get to work kind of. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I chose this book. I just think this is crazy fun. It's nice to have a comic that you can look forward to month to month,
uh-huh,
to just, like, dive in and it just be crazy and wild like this. I have the 8th issue sitting on my desk. I still haven't read yet. The 9th one should be out probably in a week or two. You know, I could have waited till the whole series got ran and picked the whole thing up, like, in a collected edition, which, yeah, I most likely will do once it's all collected, is I'll pick it up that way and then, you know, just go on eBay with the whole run of floppies most likely.
before I get to
but
it.
You might just be buying it for me. So,
because I'm that guy. I'm the guy who collects the floppies, and my wife had to cut me on that. She said, "Yep, you're cut on that. You're spending at least $50 a week. Yeah, $200 a month. You got to slow it down."
Yeah. I'm way, way below that threshold. I get just a handful of comics a month now, but I had had a collection of all of the IDW Ninja Turtle stuff, like not only just single issues, but I had some variants and stuff too.
Yeah.
And when I had to make that decision to go between, like, am I collecting comics or am I reading comics? Yeah. I pulled the plug on my Ninja Turtle collection because I have all the hardcovers they release. I'm going to continue to get those.
Yeah.
Plus, I'll usually try to scoop stuff up on a digital sale to have it, you know, convenient to read as well. But yeah, with this one, I wanted to get the floppies because I wanted to read it on a monthly basis because I knew that this is the kind of thing, if you just try to pound through it all,
you got to, man.
It just gets tedious if you do that. You know, if you're just grinding through it so quickly, everything starts to blur together, you know, and it's easy for something to become a chore. Like, you know, I've got 30 issues of this to read. And at some point you're just like, okay, I got to push through this many more. This one, I'd rather one issue this month. Let's read it. It's done.
Yeah.
See, never really have that.
It gets really hard, man, because, you know, you open a book and you're like, oh man, like with me, I buy a book and I got that collector kind of, I guess, hindrance. I don't know what you want to call that. Because once I go into a comic shop, I get it bagged and boarded and I bring it home, and I usually go with my son. He's like, all right, cool. Are we going to read our comics? And be like, no, it's going in my long box. And that's where it sits. And I usually then I go and be like, well, now I need to go and get the digital copy of the book that I just bought, because now I don't want to pull that one out because I want it to be pristine and clean, and I don't want the pages to get bent. And I'm like, you, am I collecting them or am I reading them? I used to sit there and be like, forget all those people who collect them. You know, comics are for reading. But then I started wanting to collect them once I get them. And I'm like, ooh, this is a clean copy here. How did this get into the store this clean, you know?
I always have the tendency to want to collect things. That's kind of part of my nature and something I'm fighting against. But I have always read my physical copies of comics. And while I've always treated them somewhat gingerly, like, that's one of the things I kind of broke. And when I started getting just a few monthly comics again, I wasn't even going to bag and board them. I was just going to, whatever, I'm going to treat them like reading material.
Yeah.
But after a while, I kind of started changing my mind about that. So it was like, but you know, I think what it was is I got the macro series, which we're going to talk about issue number 2.
Yeah.
And I got the first one just because I was like, what the heck is this? I was like, okay, I'll pick one up to try it. And well, my LCS took whatever I said as meaning I wanted to subscribe. So I went in there like, you know, a few weeks later or whatever, and issue number 2 was there. So I was like, fine. You know, I mean, he's always treated me well. I'm not going to be like, no, take back that issue I didn't want.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'll go ahead and get the 4 issues of the macro series because they're not cheap. They're $8 an issue, but they're, you know, double size issues. So you're getting your value definitely. But I was like, well, I'll go ahead and get all 4 and then I'll just sell them on eBay because somebody will want to pick up the set. So I did that and I made, you know, the majority of my money back that way, which was nice. But that was when I was like, yeah, if I'm going to try to do something like that, I got to bag and board these, you know, I can't just have them laying around.
Right.
So I decided to start bag and boarding stuff a bit.
Yeah, that's how it happens, man. Cool. I love this issue. I love that they colorized it. It definitely did this book a little bit more justice because there's some things in here you're like, man, how was this only in black and white? I think this is something that, you know, people should go back out there and check it out. If you read it when it was black and white, you know, it's worth going back and taking a look at it and collecting it, or however you want to, if you're going to wait for the trades to come out, whatever you're going to do, this is worth it.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun read. It's just, if you're a Ninja Turtle fan, it's weird, it's different and fun. You're not going to find anything like it. So,
yeah,
you know, it's worth a shot.
Definitely. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment.
Hey guys, welcome to Secret of the Segment, the part of the episode where we talk about everything Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So sit back, have a slice of pizza, and hang out with Paul and Joey.
All right, guys, this is the segment of the episode where we bring something of the TMNT universe into this, and it could be anything. That's why we call it Secret of the Segment. It could be whatever we feel like talking about that has to do with the TMNT universe. This week, we're going to be talking about our three top favorite TMNT villains. Let's start with your number three, Paul.
All right, so I thought about this for a while, and there's a lot of great villains in the Ninja Turtle universe, obviously. I think that what makes Ninja Turtles so special is that there is just so many interesting characters in it. So when I was thinking of my top three, there's obviously some villains that are the most important to TMNT, and there are other ones that are just more interesting in one way or another. So my third one is actually going to be the most important villain in the Ninja Turtle universe, and that's Shredder. I put him as my number three because he's such an integral part of the story that there's just kind of less flexibility with what they can do with him. You know, it's kind of like, you look at like what Marvel does and the big time characters, how much do they change? You know, I mean,
right.
You keep on getting comics coming out, but they can't really do anything too wild with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you get other characters like Hawkeye, and suddenly Matt Fraction gets his hands on Hawkeye, and Hawkeye becomes something awesome because he has the freedom to do that. So Shredder, you don't really have that kind of freedom to make him something unexpectedly interesting. He's interesting just because of who and what he is, and he's such a core part of what makes the Ninja Turtle mythos. So that's why Shredder's my number three.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, he's not going to be my number three. I think he's going to be closer to my top there. And mine are probably going to be, you know, I always go back to the cartoon, right? That's where I experienced the Ninja Turtles for the very first time. It was the cartoon and the movies because I grew up in the 90s, right? And that's when I was, you know, into the Ninja Turtles. So I always go back to that. And in the cartoon, there was some characters in there that I always kind of loved. And my number three was Baxter Stockman in the cartoon because, you know, he was this, you know, this obscure character. You know, he eventually turns into a fly because of this experiment. You know, he has different kind of characteristics in comics but I'm specifically talking about him in the TV show. And I always loved it. You know, there was one time when I remember going out to McDonald's and they had Ninja Turtles toys, and I had to get myself a Happy Meal. And I always wanted a Ninja Turtle one, right? Obviously, that's what kids wanted. But I got a Baxter Stockman toy. So, and I loved that thing, man. So, because I was like, you know what? He's a weird, obscure character. He's not a turtle, but he's kind of a cool villain. And he may not be like the most revered villain or the most feared villain, but he was definitely a villain who was definitely a thorn in the Ninja Turtles' side.
Yeah, and I said this on Twitter when we were tweeting, getting some other people's villain choices. One of our followers tweeted their admiration for Baxter Stockman as a villain. And, I definitely, same thing as you. I mean, I grew up with the same stuff, and I loved him in the cartoon because he was such a wacky villain. He has a really big part of the Ninja Turtle mythos. I mean, like in the current IDW series, he's a big character in that series.
Yeah.
And not in the way he was in the cartoon. Interesting fact for you. In the original Mirage comic, he was a black guy. He was a scientist.
Okay.
And for the cartoon, they made him a white guy because they didn't want to make a goofy, nerdy black guy and risk being insensitive.
Okay.
To another that's race interesting. Like that. So that's why they made him white in the cartoon, is so they can make him this goofy, nerdy guy. And they didn't want to be, you know, they didn't want to like that to be the representation of a black character in the cartoon.
That's pretty interesting, though. That I didn't know that. That's pretty cool. That's a good one. You should have saved that for like a trivia question.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of that. You'll forget half the stuff I tell you by the time I use it for trivia or something. Right. Anyways,
just wait till the later episodes, and I'll completely forget about this episode altogether.
I'll just overload your mind so you can't remember everything that I tell you.
There you go. I can barely remember how old I am, man.
I try to forget.
Right?
So my number two, I'm going to actually kind of have a dichotomy with my number two here, kind of representing two different thoughts, because I was really trying to debate who I wanted for my number two, and there were two ways I wanted to go, and they were for different reasons. One is Karai, Shredder's daughter. I wanted to choose Karai because she is a character that has more flexibility to her story than Shredder, because mm-hmm. she's not Shredder. She's not that linchpin of the universe, you know? She may be very close to him and, you know, she wants to be leader of the Foot and everything and, you know, honor her father. And so in some of the iterations, Shredder's not even her father.
Yeah.
But, like, I think she's a super interesting character and an ability to have a really strong female character present in the universe, too. And mm-hmm. I think they've done really great with her in the IDW universe. And they did a solid job with her in the first Nickelodeon series. I haven't watched any of the second one, so I can't speak to that. But in the first one, I thought they did a good job with her character. So she's a great character in a, I don't know, a more kind of storytelling sense, I guess. Then the other one I wanted to say is kind of going more, you know, kind of like your Baxter Stockman pick, kind of going for the crazy stuff you could do with them as the Rat King, created by Jim Lawson. And he, like, I mean, back in the cartoon, he was just, like, ridiculous. He was this guy that lived in the sewers and was, like, wrapped up in shredded linen. And, you know, the rats were his friends and he controlled them. And, I mean, he was, like, you know, an inch away from being Oscar the Grouch or the Great Trash Heap. I don't know. Like, he, you know, he was a odd character. Sometimes right. he would be a bit more on the turtles side and actually kind of be a part of helping them. Not because he wanted to help them, but because he was, you know, trying to maintain his own status quo. But then, you know, you have different iterations of the Rat King, and the iteration in the IDW series, the ongoing series, is very interesting because he is part of the Pantheon. So he and his brothers and sisters are gods.
Yeah.
And okay. his mythos there is sort of like part Loki, part Pied Piper. Like he's the trickster. He's really devious. And recently in the ongoing series, I couldn't tell exactly how many issues ago it is, but the aftermath is still present in the story. Actually, the comic you're going to talk about is going to directly relate to it. He basically, to screw with the turtles, he was playing Pied Piper and controlling all these kids, making them follow him. He's just going to walk them all off a broken down bridge to their death just to screw with the turtles.
Wow.
He's going to murder a bunch of kids just to screw with the turtles. Like, I think it's interesting the differences that they've done in that character over the years. But he's, like, such an interesting character. They could do something so dark with him as what they're doing now. And he could be as goofy as he was in the cartoon. You know?
Right, right. You definitely would not think that the iteration that they have in the comics would have evolved from something that they had in the cartoons. Because he was pretty wacky in the cartoons, and he was just this guy who wrapped himself in linens, like you said. And I remember a handful of episodes, I was like, who's this guy? This guy's not even this guy's a joke. You know, and I love how writers can take an obscure joke character like that and turn it into something that actually is something that is worth, you know, putting in the Turtles roster of rogues. So I think that's actually pretty fun.
All right. Who's your number two?
My number two. Okay. So I think last time when me and you talked, I kind of had like this debate between whether my number three was going to be Bebop and Rocksteady or Baxter Stockman. I don't think I'm going to use Bebop and Rocksteady in this one, but they are, I have to say, if we had a top four, I would throw them in this. But because these two guys were like neck and neck, whether I was going to put them in number two spot or number one spot. So my number two is Krang. He's the mastermind behind a lot of this stuff, right? Especially in the cartoons, he was like the mastermind behind of everything that Shredder did. I just love Krang. He was this crazy, obscure character that looked like a brain, and he put himself in some kind of artificial intelligence body, and he had the Technodrome. I mean, the Technodrome could be a villain all in itself, right? So that's why I think he was my number two, because of how cool he was. Only because he had a really cool vehicle.
Yeah, Krang was really in the center of everything with the cartoon. You know, through the different iterations, he's had different involvement. In some iterations, there's not a Krang, it's just the Utrom. In the IDW series, right. The Utrom are like the race, and Krang is just a specific person that is an Utrom. In the cartoon series, if I remember correctly, the Utroms were all Krang. They were like a hive mind type of deal. And I should say that was the first Nickelodeon series. But yeah, so I mean, he's been done in so many different ways. In the original cartoons, like, he really was like a the guy who kind of everything centered around. I mean, he was the link to Dimension X. He had the Technodrome, all kinds of crazy technology. The Shredder was the guy with the wanted his own vengeance, that Krang was taking advantage of that to get what he wanted. Honestly, I couldn't even tell you for sure why Krang wanted those turtles so bad. Krang is definitely great, but it's really only in the cartoon where he's that centerpiece. And in other parts, he may be a big piece. Yeah. Like in the IDW comic series, it's more like there's him, there's the Foot Clan, and there's the Turtles. And then stuff changes as the series goes on, of course. You know, like he is not aligned with Shredder, although there are ways in which he has helped Shredder along as well. Yeah, you have a lot of reading to do to catch up to all that, so I don't want to give anything away, but...
I definitely do.
Yeah, so my number one is two guys that you mentioned already, because they are the number one. These guys, to me, are the epitome of what makes the Ninja Turtle characters so great. You know, like you said, as a kid, like, you know, everybody loves the Turtles. Like, you know, you, of course, like, you know, the Turtles are your favorite. But, man, Bebop and Rocksteady are great. Their character design is awesome. They can be used in so many different ways. In the cartoon, they obviously were, you know, a couple of doofuses and were easily foiled and stuff like that. But through different iterations, it hasn't been that way. One of the things I loved about that first Nickelodeon series is they did the thing where they kind of crossed it over with the original series. And, you know, the original series Turtles are all goofy and silly and stuff and still, like, save the day. But they end up butting heads with the Bebop and Rocksteady from the, like, the modern series, who, like, whip their butts. The modern Turtles butt heads against the old school Bebop and Rocksteady, and they're just bumbling idiots. You know, plus Shredder and Krang, for that matter. But, it, like, that was just pretty great. And if you haven't seen that, you should definitely check it out. Yeah, in the modern cartoon series, well, and I guess I should say the first Nickelodeon one, once again, haven't seen the second one yet, they're very different characters, but it's still, it works, and it's done really well, and it's great. You know, they're still the comic foil at times, but they're not just buffoons. In the IDW series, they're still kind of lunkheads, but they're much more vicious and fearsome. I mean, they leave Donatello for dead, and the only reason Donatello wasn't dead is because, you know, magical science that can exist in comic books that just inexplicably, like, oh yes, we'll just put Donatello's mind in this robot while we fix his body a little bit here. And after a while, okay, now we'll put him back in there. But yeah, I mean, they killed Donatello and walked away from his, you know, his body with blood dripping off of a sledgehammer. I mean, it wasn't graphic. Like, they don't show anything graphically in the IDW series, but, like, it was, like, viciously implied. Yeah, I mean, and they're, you know, I mean, they get used from the really silly to the really fearsome like that in the IDW series, but the character design is just so great on them. I mean, I've showed you all the commissions I've gotten, and I have three different commissions that involve Bebop and Rocksteady just because they're so good. Like, it just, like, it, I want to see more artists do Bebop and Rocksteady just so I could see it, you know?
Yeah, they're pretty good. Actually, I think I collected the series that came out, Bebop and Rocksteady. What did it? Bebop and
Destroy
Rocksteady.
Everything, I think.
Yeah, that's what it is. That was awesome. I read the first two, and they were really good. I enjoyed it. Bebop and Rocksteady, man, they are awesome. I love those two. I just can't say anything more than that. They're great. In the new cartoon that you're saying, my son, he's all over it. He's like, hey, Dad, can we watch it? I was like, sure. I watched a little bit of it with him, and I gotta tell you, they changed it up a little bit. I think Rocksteady there, he's got some, like, Russian accent, which was very interesting.
Bebop, I'd say, is a bit, I don't know, Michael Jackson-ish.
So weird.
Like, he's a street thug type of guy, but he has, like, the dance moves and the, it's fun how it's, I like how it's different, you know.
It's fun. I enjoy the new series, how they did it. You know, it's not Leonardo who's the leader, it's Raphael, and they kind of switch things up, and we talked about that a little bit. You can't have the same thing keep going, and people are just going to, you know, fall off of it a little bit. So I understand the way they did and they switched it up. It's pretty cool, but I love how you can do that with different characters, you know, change their character up a little bit. And it works, you know, it works for what it is. But my number one is going to be the one and only Shredder. That's because, you know, he has a wide and vast history. his history is so huge that, you know, on the last episode, I did the character spotlight on him, and there was so much that I had to condense it, and I could only talk about comic books. And even when I talked about all that, there was so much, and I even had to condense the comic book aspect of it, because there was even, there was seriously, like, pages and pages and pages of each and every comic book that he was in, and there's so much history there. And then it continues with the TV shows, the movies, all kinds of video games, everything. And they have pages and pages of upon pages of history of the Shredder and the different iterations of history and things of that nature. So I love him because he is such a huge character in the Turtles, and sometimes he's not a huge character. He's not their greatest foe in some iterations. And some iterations, he is the one and only big greatest foe. So I love that that's what Shredder is. And he, that excites me because I grew up seeing him in the cartoons and the movies. I even picked up some comic books, and that's where I seen him. He was the one and only greatest Ninja Turtles foe. And that's why I like him so much.
Not much to argue with there. I will say, I think it's kind of funny that with your other two choices, you're just like, oh yeah, I'm only basing this on the cartoon. Then Shredder, you're like, oh, but there's so much more.
But there is. There's so much more. There is. That's why he is my number one. All right, man. That was fun. That was really cool to talk about that stuff. Our next segment, we're going to be talking about some TMNT trivia. It's my turn to stump Paul. Are you ready to get into some of this trivia, Paul?
I might be. I just might be.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to trivia.
Okay, everybody, I'm going to play TMNT quiz.
All right, guys, are you ready for some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trivia? This week, it's my turn to stump Paul, and I've got some really good questions. Right, here's number one. What was the special effects fail revealed in the HD edition of the 1990 Ninja Turtles movie? Was it A, the pizza slices were obviously plastic, B, the weapons bent in action, C, the actor portraying Michelangelo was taped using profanity in costume, or D, the actor's mouths were visible in costume?
Should be like all of the above, shouldn't it? But now it's, if I remember correctly, it's D, that you could actually see them through the mouths of the costume.
Correct. D is the answer. The actors' mouths were visible inside the costumes. You got one there.
Perfect.
There you go. So, see, I kind of took something out of the news here, incorporated into this. So, have you heard about Grover, that Grover thing going on in the news?
Caught wind of that a little bit, but I didn't dig into it, but I saw it floating around Twitter.
There's a video going around saying that Grover kind of used some profane language, but they're kind of saying that it's like one of those Laurel Yanni thing going around or whatever.
I'm not sure what that is, but they're saying that it's you tell somebody that something is something, and then it's really easy for it to come across that way. So, you know, you play a little snippet, you say that Grover is saying something in particular, and it's really easy to hear it once you're led to believe that already.
The power of persuasion is powerful. All right, number two. What is the name of a superior faction of the Foot Clan led by Shredder? Is it A, the Saki Clan, B, the Shredder Ichizoku, which is translated to clan, C, Shredder Elite or Elite Guard, or D, the Foot Guard?
C.
Correct, C. Shredder Elite or Elite Guard. Got two. All right, number three. When was the first TMNT video game released? A, 1984, B, 1987, C, 1989, or D, 1988?
That's a tough one. I'm going to guess it's D.
If you said D, 1988, you are wrong. It was C, 1989. And I believe they got best video game.
I knew it had to be right around there. Was that the one where you're like, you go down the sewers and it's side scrolling, but then when you're out of the sewers, it's like top down on you?
I can't remember exactly, but it's a very, very first Ninja Turtles game.
Yeah, I think that one's the first. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty positive that's the first one. That's the first one I ever played. Man, was that game hard. I loved it.
Yeah, it was definitely hard. Yes, that was the hardest one. It was pretty cool. All right, here's another one. What year did the TMNT receive individual bandana colors? Was it A, 1984? B, 1988, C, 1994, or D, 1987?
So there's another tough one because I know that they received it with the start of the cartoon. It's not like I have all these dates memorized. I mean, I know that when the series started was 84, the comic series, although the Turtles were born in 83. But I think it's 88. I think that's when the cartoon started.
If you said B, 1988, you would be correct. It is B, 1988. Good job. You got three.
I feel pretty good about that. You're throwing all those dates
all right,
in there.
Here's another one for you.
History class, man. Those date questions.
Yeah, well, you know what? Guess what? You're going to love this one here. So how long did the TMNT... 1980s, there you go, there's another date for you, animated series run? Was it A, 10 years, B, 15 years, C, 8 years, or D, 9 years?
Gosh, I'm going to go D. So you have three that are right by each other, 8, 9, and 10. So like, I know it's in that ballpark. I'm going to go D.
D, yeah. 9 years. If you said D, 9 years, you would be wrong. The answer is A, 10 years, 1987 to 1997.
I'm going to give you the hardest questions next time.
So you got 3 out of 5. So how about this one? I'll give you a bonus question. If you can get this one right, I will give you... I will give you the benefit of the doubt here.
It's another date question. I'm just hanging out.
So this one is, what year was I born? No, just kidding. Here we go. The bonus question. If Donatello uses a bow and Michelangelo uses the nunchuck and Raphael uses the sai, which weapon does Leonardo use? This is
a
trick
question. Going to argue with you about the answer on this one. Because I don't remember what the right answer is on it. I know it's a trick question because a ninja wouldn't use a katana. But Leonardo uses a katana, specifically in many different iterations. And the question's not specific enough. That's my argument there. I don't remember.
So what's your answer? Are you answering
my
katana?
Answer would be katana, and I would be correct because you weren't specific enough. But I know that you're leading to something else here because it's a trick question.
Correct.
But I don't remember the name of the
So a katana is primarily used by a samurai. And you got to remember, these guys aren't samurai. These guys are ninja. And a ninja would use a ninjato. So on that one, you're wrong.
Leonardo uses a katana. So I don't know what to tell you. He calls it a katana.
You know what? That one is up for debate because, you know, there is some books where they say, you know, grab your katana or here's your katana. Or, I'm using my katana kind of thing. They do say that
because
in some of the books.
I'm going to argue with you about this every episode, the rest of this podcast life.
But they're ninja. And the ninja don't
it's
use
not
the samurai.
He uses a poorly chosen weapon.
All right. I don't know if I should give you a half point
for
that
one. You don't have to give me any sympathy because I am going to make sure you get zero right next time. You're going to have it hard.
All right. That's funny. Okay. Are you ready to hear what you would have won?
I am ready. I'm eager. Can't wait to hear what could have been mine.
You would have won a chance to train with Orokosaki. But beware, he has been known to hold vengeance towards a rat and four turtles. In this training session with Orokosaki and the Foot Clan, you would have been able to compete for a chance to be a part of the Elite Guard. Along with the chance to be a part of the Elite Guard, you would have had all the riches you can think of. But guess what? You don't have to worry about that because you did not win.
That's good. I don't want vengeance. I don't need to be a part of vengeance. Well, I mean, except for next week when I have vengeance for this, I'll be part of that. Every question is going to just be...
That was good, man. That was a fun one. You're like, there's not going to be any... This is not going to be multiple choice for you at all.
You better study up on obscure hometowns of the creators.
Oh, that's going to be fun. You're going to go deep.
Deep? Deeper than you ever thought you would go.
All right, man. I'm looking forward to it. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and move on to our next segment.
You're about to be shell-shocked.
All right, it's time for the second book, and this week I'm going to be talking about Macro Series number 2, entitled Michelangelo. This one was actually pretty fun, dude. And like you said a little bit ago when we were talking about the Rat King and how he had those orphans and he was going to lead them off of a bridge. This one kind of picks up right after then, and, you know, the Ninja Turtles have rescued the orphans, right? And they have them all hanging out with them. So let's kind of jump into the creative team really quick, and then I'll jump into what the story's about a little bit. So the story is written by Ian Flynn, art by Michael Dialnis, letters by Sean Lee, assistant editor Megan Brown, group editor Bobby Kernow, and publisher Greg Goldstein. In this issue, we see the Turtles reeling back from a handful of battles, and Master Splinter leads a faction of the Foot Clan, and they have plans to restore the city. But at the moment, they are laying low with a group of orphans, and the Turtles try to keep the atmosphere lighthearted and fun for the kids. But Master Splinter has different intentions. He intends to train the kids as future Foot members, and the Turtles disagree, but they will not disobey, except for Michelangelo. He sneaks the children out in the middle of the night, and the book ends with him defying Master Splinter in a manner that changes the mind of the sensei. So what did you think about this book?
When I was reading the Macro series, I read the first one, and it was fine. Like, I read it, I enjoyed it, but I didn't think that much of it. And I kind of took them as being, you know, kind of just another thing to sell to Turtles fans getting the comics. This was the one that changed my mind. And then going back and rereading the first one, I had a lot of stronger feelings about it, too, because it kind of made me, I guess, realize some more of the depth of what was being showcased here. But this one blew me away. And I think that because you haven't read from the beginning of the series to now, or even read like all of the most recent stuff, like I was saying earlier, you got some reading to do. Yeah. Not that you don't know what's going on, or you haven't, you know, read some stuff here and there, but this one is given so much more weight by the slow, gradual buildup of the tension between the Turtles and Splinter. And
yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Like, one of the things you see in this is how much greater the Turtles' skill is than those around them, which you don't often see, really. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, they're not so much about defeating those around them, but Michelangelo, like, takes down all the Foot guys around him to get out of there with these kids. You see guys tied up, and just, so it's like Michelangelo, the least respected of the four brothers as far as skill would go, has skill that supersedes all the Foot Clan.
When, you know, he defies Master Splinter and he, you know, goes up against him a little bit there, and he says, you know, you made your point. You made your point. You win this one. You're right. Let's Let's not do this. Let's not train these kids. Let's do this your guys' way. And I thought that was interesting. I was like, wow, I didn't expect this from Michelangelo. Maybe Donatello, maybe Leonardo, maybe even Raph, you know what I mean? But like you said, Michelangelo is the least respected, probably most likely because he's always messing around and he's always, you know, just trying to have fun, right? He's the wacky guy, right? It's out of characteristic for him, but it works. It's awesome. And I love that it was him and not any of the other three, because that you expect that out of the other three. You didn't expect it out of this. And I loved that he did this because none of the other guys were wanting to think about even doing anything like this. They didn't want to disobey Master Splinter, right? I love the way he did it. It was like civil disobedience kind of a thing where you're doing it for the right cause.
Leonardo's probably the best example where you would think that he would be the one to do something like this, but he's the one that has always been the leader. So he's the leader of his brothers. He's the leader of the
Hamato clan.
Yeah, the Hamato clan. Michelangelo is, yeah, he's just reacting on, not on impulse, because obviously, like, this, it took a long time to get him to this point. And he put, yeah, even though, like, you know, it only took him so long to realize, like, how much more impossible what he was wanting to do really was, with, you know, getting all these kids out of there and being able to take care of and provide for all of them. He just knows that wrong is wrong and is not willing to put up with it anymore. And this is just the line when Master Splinter wants to turn all these kids into Foot. And that's like, that's his criteria for taking care of them, is they're all going to be the future generation of Foot. And it's not an option. When they finally catch up, like, you watch this fight between Splinter and Michelangelo, they're not pulling punches. Like, they're viciously going at, right, each other. Oh, they're, yeah, they're playing for keeps. It. The page where you see Splinter have the change of mind, Splinter is there with teeth bared. And that's where Splinter realizes that he's wrong. And he presents it as, you know, he gives an out for both of them because he has to save face. Like, he has stepped into the role of being the leader of the Foot Clan and has willingly sacrificed morals to, yeah, be the leader that is, you know, is expected. He can't lose face in this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So he gives them the out and says, you know, basically says, this was a demonstration. Now let's really do this other thing.
you think that was like kind of like he got one on me, you know, I'm gonna say it's a demonstration because nobody gets one up on me.
Well, the thing is, he realizes that he's wrong.
Yeah.
But he can't admit that he's wrong because he can't lose face as the leader of the Foot Clan. Yeah, that's when you set yourself up to be usurped, and he can't do that.
So you don't think it was him, you know, cracking his ego a little bit?
I don't necessarily think it's about ego. I think that Splinter's character over the long term has shown that he's not about ego.
Okay.
I think that his actions are greatly driven by responsibility, and he has to save face,
okay,
but he's also giving an out to his son. So that way the resolution, yeah, of saving face isn't him having to, you know, beat his son to death.
Okay, I see it that way. Yeah, okay.
Because Michelangelo is not going to stop fighting. So he's going to have to seriously hurt Michelangelo to end this fight. So even Leonardo even says, you won, you goober. He's given you an honorable way out. Oh.
Yeah, okay.
So Splinter realizes that he's wrong, but he has to provide an out for both of them. Like, there can't be another solution. So the only solution for this is him to say, like, this is my idea all along. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's definitely easy to look at it as, like, him protecting his ego, but he's just demonstrated ego not being a driving factor all through the series. You know, there's more important things than ego. So I think it really is, he's realizing the path he's gone down and wanting to do something about it. Did you ever read issue number, what was it, 89, I think it was? It was the Christmas issue?
No, I still haven't read that, man.
Ridiculous.
I've got so much to read.
Christmas. No excuses. it was Christmas time. But anyways, issue, I'm pretty sure it was number 89. It was essentially a Christmas carol that told through the Ninja Turtles, but it pertained to the greater story that was going on. So it wasn't.
Why I did not read it, because, and I think I even told you, hey, is this the series that number 89 is coming out of? Because I wanted to start from the very beginning and kind of refresh my memory on some of the stuff that I know, but not completely, because I have some of the stuff there that I've read. So I was like, hey, you know, this is the one, right? I think you told me, yeah, that's the one. Read that. And it leads up to 89. So I was like, okay, cool. I want to read 89, but then I kind of don't because I want to kind of get the full story before I get to the end. It's almost like flipping to the end of the book before you even read the beginning. And I didn't want to do that.
Well, that's what you're doing by reading the macro series, though. I mean, this is still tying in. I mean, it's a little bit more peripheral, but this is tying in with the greater theme of what's going on. So
I guess so. I guess that's the reason why I wanted to do this, too, though. I wanted to jump in a little bit more to the series so that I can get the full story so that I don't sit back here and be like, well, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, you're gonna have to start talking about the early books. You just have, you know, like 80, 90 issues to read to catch up on the main title by the next time we record. So yeah, you can do that. So the way I see it at this point, this is where you start seeing doors open to not only have one possibility. If Splinter continues to go down the path that he's been on of being this relentless master of the Foot Clan, that being his number one priority, that's going to end up ending badly because his sons are eventually going to not put up with it anymore, which is what you're seeing in this issue to an extent. So this is opening the door to, you know, what is going to happen next? We're getting close to the 100th issue of this book. You know, who knows how long it's going to go on for? Do they have a plan to end for it? You know, Splinter has been running the Foot Clan for quite a while, and it makes pretty logical sense for the ultimate conclusion of this series to be a conclusion of Splinter running the Foot Clan. What's going to happen? Is he going to hand it off to somebody? Karai wants it back. Shredder could somehow come back from the dead. Who knows? You know, I mean, it's not like these things are unheard of in comic books.
Right. They could try and even kill him off.
The trajectory it's looking like it's heading in, if nothing changes, is a showdown between the Turtles and the Foot Clan, Turtles and Splinter. So this is opening a door to him realizing that these two pieces of himself can't reconcile. You know, he can't be this ruthless, relentless master of the Foot Clan and also be, you know, a compassionate father and, you know, leader of his own family. Which one is more important to him? Which one is what's going to win? Why does the Foot Clan matter more?
Which could be the reason why they showed us that little bit of, you know, that throwback to when they were, before they were in their reincarnated state.
Exactly.
Which I love that they go back into, he's teaching his son for the first time. And you read that a little bit and he's a little bit rough on him there. A little tough on him, right? And it's almost like that tough love kind of a thing. I was like, huh, it works perfectly with this story because of the way this ends up, you know? And maybe that's what we're seeing here, that tough love a little bit. But he has to be this leader of the Foot. He has to be this, you know, this amazing, strong, hardcore person, like you said, relentless. You use the word relentless. And that's a perfect word for it. He has to be. Or else, you know, the Foot, you know, they followed Shredder, you know, Karai, all this, like, those are some crazy leaders that they followed. And for them to flip everything and follow Splinter here, I understand why he's doing some of this stuff. But do I like it? Probably not. I'm going to side with the Turtles on this one. You know, I'd probably be on the side with the Turtles if it does end up them facing off one another.
I guess you could say the Foot Clan is kind of like the politics of it, you know?
Yeah.
And the Turtles represent not being driven by aspirations or even by, you know, responsibility to.
Are the Turtles the liberals?
Well, I don't even think it's that. I think that their driving force is not political. They're not trying to advance themselves. Like, they're just trying to exist. They're trying to do the right things. It has nothing to do with politics. You know, and Splinter, you know, his defeating Shredder was about that's what it ended up being, but it was about protecting his family was the core purpose of it. Okay. But then there's also the vengeance because Shredder had his sons and him executed in their past life.
Yeah.
But then once he kills the Shredder, now the Foot Clan has no leader. So he steps into that role and that's where he takes the power. Yeah, I don't think his reason for killing Shredder was to take the power.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that's the example that he just set. And so if he's not going to keep control of the power, like now by taking that power, he is constantly in the position to lose the power. And the only way you're going to lose that power is by being killed yourself, by somebody else having a coup and taken over.
Yeah. Showing your weakness. It's going to be one of those things where you show you're weak. And if you're weak, you know, what else is going to happen? Somebody is going to come in and take it from you because you are weak. They saw the weakness in you. So they, you know, that opened up the doors for them to come and get you.
Yep. And you're not going to walk away from that. Like, it's not something somebody's going to, what's so interesting about this. I think this is the heaviest issue of Ninja Turtles of anything in this run of Ninja Turtles. Because you have Michelangelo standing up for what he believes. He understands this hierarchy and everything. So by going head-to-head with Splinter like he's doing, he's entering into something that the logical result should be, you know, somebody being greatly damaged coming out of this. I mean, if he wins this fight with Splinter, I mean, basically setting Splinter up, somebody's got to decide, you know what? He let his son beat him up. You know, he lost that fight. Why don't we kill him and take the power, you know? Okay, and if Michelangelo loses, that weakens the Turtles. So then he's either in the position to just fully submit or, you know, if he doesn't fully submit, then he's shown himself as weak. I mean, it's just he chooses to put them in an impossible situation and Splinter manages to give them the one out. And he has to realize that is the situation. And he has to want to take that pathway. And he hasn't shown wanting to take that pathway up until this point. So this is a big changing point. But I think that there's more weight in this issue than I think it's really easy to read this and overlook the gravity of the situation.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's very easy to not get what we get out of this. You just read this and you're like, oh, they just had a little fight. But there's more to it. Yeah, and now you're putting yourself in somebody from the foot's, you know, perspective, and they're watching this play out, and they're like, whoa, this guy's getting beat up. This is our leader. We're supposed to be following somebody who is supposed to be, he's supposed to be the head of the foot, and we represent this big, huge thing, but he's getting beat up by a turtle, this turtle that we've been fighting for years, who we've seen people who are stronger than Splinter take these guys out many times. And this is who we're, you know, this is who we're leading, who's leading us right now. And yeah, I understand that aspect of it, dude. It is pretty deep when you think about it, because when I first read it, I didn't read it like that. I didn't see that. And now that we're talking about it a little bit, I see it from a different perspective. And that's you're spot on with that. And I love the way he did it, because that's the only way that he had to do it without, you know, getting the foot behind him that he's leading, you know, go kill him or beat him up or take them all out and then find a new leader.
This was the issue that made me kind of wake up and really pay attention to the macro series.
I think it's a pretty strong one. I definitely like that. This one was really good. And I got to tell you, the artwork is amazing. I love the colors in that flashback page there. You know, this is awesome. The Splinter that we see here is the Splinter that I've always seen, and this is what he looks like. These turtles here are perfect, and I love the way they look. I love seeing them without their masks and kind of showcasing what they do best. Mikey's spot on, man. He's strong, and I'm looking at him now, and I'm respecting him a whole lot more after reading this.
Yeah, it really shows a side of him that you don't often get to see. He's always the little brother, you know? He's always the one. He's not the leader. He's not, you know, he's not Raphael or Donatello. He's not the muscle and the anger. He's not the intelligence of Donatello. But, you know, it's been shown many times throughout the series, and Splinter has said many times what Michelangelo has that nobody else does. You know, he has heart in a way that none of his brothers do. And there's oftentimes that it leads them through something that the other brothers aren't capable of. You see that in the first of the Nickelodeon series too, where there are times where the other brothers like can't get past the situation they're in. There's something about him that he's able to interact and see things differently. So
yeah,
fantastic.
And like the book we talked about in the last episode, where, you know, all their plans that they came up with, and none of them were working, but the one plan that worked with that was so off the wall was Mikey's.
Exactly. He saw it from a different perspective and saw something that the others thought was ridiculous, and it was the way out because some situations you're not going to be able to meet head on in a logical manner. You have to either figure out a way around it or meet it head on in a way that is just going to kind of baffle your way right through it.
Yeah, I loved it. This was awesome. All right, let's go ahead and move on to character spotlight.
All right, so the character that I chose to do for this that has been a mystery because I just kept on forgetting to tell you who I chose to do for this. Originally, I was going to do a villain, but because our secret segment was centered around villains, I figured I would flip-flop that and I would do a character that's not a villain. And I wanted to do this character because in a lot that we've talked about with Ninja Turtles, by no means do I know everything. I have not read everything Ninja Turtles that's out there, but I have a little more depth than you do. So there's some stuff that I know that's there that was introduced to me. Actually, in this, some of the stuff I'm going to tell you was introduced to me by my LCS within the last like year, probably. So, I mean, I didn't know this until recently. So okay. Fugitoid is who I'm going to talk about. Awesome. Did you know that the Fugitoid was created and published before the Ninja Turtles? So there's
no, I did not.
It was created as a like a backup story. If I remember, so this is all secondhand knowledge from what my my shop owner told me. But it was created and they were trying to shop it as a backup story to go in other comics. You know, like comics will do that where there's the main story, but then there'll be a short story at the end that's a different story.
Okay.
It was published in Gobbledygook Comics. And then it was collected and then it carried on over into TMNT issues 5-7. Professor Honeycutt, also known as Dr. Honeycutt, is a semi-retired scientist from the planet Duhunib whose mind was transferred into his working robot as both were struck by lightning. As he refused to build a transmat device, a means of teleportation, for General Blink of the Federation military in the war against the Triceraton Republic, he was categorized as a fugitoid, short for fugitive android. So that's straight out of Wikipedia, nothing special there. But that was the beginning of Fugitoid. So he actually started before the Ninja Turtles. So it's quite overlooked often, cool. But he's a pretty integral character just to everything even coming about. Now in the IDW comic series, Professor Honeycutt was a neutrino scientist who used to work for Krang. Essentially, his wife convinced him to join the resistance against Krang. He was, like kind of the cliche for scientists. He was just driven by science, not about, the politics or the war or stuff that was going on. But his wife convinced him that Krang was bad and convinced him to join the resistance. And then Krang's army eventually finds the compound and attacks it, kills his family. When Honeycutt tries to sacrifice himself to save them, they still get gunned down. Honeycutt flees. He goes to our world, disguises himself, and he gets a job with Baxter Stockman at StockGen, calls himself Chet Allen, and it kind of goes from there. He ends up working with the Foot Clan even though he knows that they're evil because they're enemies of Krang. So, and then eventually he ends up aligning with the Turtles. So he comes to Earth. He actually works with April at StockGen. And once again, that shows you the importance of Baxter Stockman. Baxter Stockman he owns StockGen.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant scientist. April gets an internship at StockGen. That's how she first meets the Turtles as Turtles and Splinter as a rat. She meets Honeycutt there as just a coworker. And then, stuff all ties back in together. He was also in the cartoons. He's in the 2003 cartoon voiced by Oliver Wyman. He was in the 2012 series voiced by David Tennant of Doctor Who fame. So that's kind of cool. And awesome. Tennant has a good voice, so it's cool to hear that one.
That one's cool.
It's kind of a cool story too. Yeah. It's like when he comes into the picture, it goes into a different type of adventure in the cartoon, which is cool. That's one thing I thought they did pretty well.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that 2012 series awesome. Is great.
I think he might be my favorite Doctor Who.
I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan, but I watched through a lot of it. I kept on wanting to try to get into it because of a comic creator that I'm friends with. And the way I got to watch any of it was I got my wife watching it. She watched every bit of it, and I would kind of like phase in and out a little bit with it. But
yeah, it was pretty cool. I got I got my 8-year-old son into it, and there's some of those there. It was like, it's probably a little bit scary for some kids. So we had to skip over a handful of episodes, but he loves Doctor Who, dude. It's like so funny. I love it. We started from the very beginning, so he wants, so I can get him into it a little bit. And he loves it, dude. It's so cheesy. It's like, it's sci-fi cheese, and it's perfect. Like, it's a love. I got a little nerd for a son, and I love it.
Yeah, kids are very impressionable like that. So we can ruin them or releasing them down this pathway of collecting an obsession that ruins our lives.
there you go.
Yeah, so that's my character spotlight. It's not the hugest spotlight. He's an interesting character and has had integral roles and stuff. But he also, you know, like you mentioned with Shredder, there's so much to say about Shredder. You can sum up Fugitoid quite a bit quicker than you can Shredder.
Hey, but that's pretty cool, man. He's got a pretty cool story, though. I didn't know that he was not a part of the Turtles before he you know, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that threw me for a loop. I never knew that. And one day my shop owner, I was talking to him, and he mentioned the Fugitoid comic. And I was like, what the heck are you talking about? I was like, oh, yeah, it was published before Ninja Turtles. And it's cool, though, because the story, like, runs right into when he crosses over. Well, I don't know if you call it a crossover as much as, like, merges into the Ninja Turtle story in issues 5 through 7 of the original series. So it all works out seamlessly. But it's a cool piece of story that it's really easy to not even know it exists. It's like, I have the IDW hardcover collections of the original stuff. It's not in there, you know, so it's and it's not really like cost prohibitive to pick up. Like, you can go find it on eBay for not too much. So something that's worth checking out, because I don't believe you're going to find it any other way. It's not collected in anything. It's easy to access. So that's Fugitoid.
That's awesome. That was pretty cool, dude. I was definitely interested in your secret character spotlight. That was pretty cool. And I kind of like not knowing what the character spotlight was. Because sometimes I'll do some character spotlights with, like, Bill or something on my other show, and he'll tell me what it is, and I'll be like, okay, cool. Then I'll kind of go and, like, do some little bit of background a little bit and kind of research them too, just to kind of refresh my memory a little bit. And this was actually kind of cool, not knowing exactly who you were picking, so that I can just be surprised along with our listeners. So that's kind of a cool aspect.
All right, maybe I won't tell you ever.
There you go. That's funny. All right, man, that was cool. I think this is the end of the show, right?
That is the end. We have done it. We've done 2 episodes of this amazing, fun, highly lauded, award-winning
I don't know about that yet. I don't know if that's ever gonna happen.
I've already awarded us the best Ninja Turtle podcast of 2019 on the Nerdy Legion Network, so I'm pretty sure it's gonna hold up.
There you go. All right. I'll take that one then. Only because we're the only one.
We're the best only one.
There you go. All right, man, this was fun. This was exciting. I definitely enjoyed both books. They were pretty fun. You know, I did not expect how deep we were going to get into the Macro series number 2. That was pretty cool. I saw a whole different side of Michelangelo, and that was pretty awesome. I was really excited to read into that Urban Legends and see some of the 90s artwork there, which was pretty cool. Maybe not the scantily clad women, but the other artwork was pretty cool with the cyborgs and all that kind of stuff. Was awesome. I'm definitely looking to read that one a whole lot, because I want to see what's going on. I want to know what the heck's going to happen with these turtles in that series there.
Yeah, I still want to know too. I'm only 7 issues in. I got to read number 8. Still sitting there.
That's pretty awesome. Cool. All right, man. So let's go ahead and end this show. We can find us on Twitter at ShellShockPod. And where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Who's Paul.
You can find me at JoeyGalvez84. And you can always send us an email at ShellShockPod@gmail.com. Write us, tweet us. You can call us at 480-442-1584. Again, that number is 480-442-1584. Drop us a line, talk to us, throw us some trivia, and maybe even a character spotlight suggestion. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you later.